Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
In the case of Israel and Gaza, the question has become painfully paradoxical, because while Israel is fighting a terrorist organization sworn to its destruction, it is simultaneously being pressured by the international community to provide food, fuel, and medical supplies to the very territory. At the heart of this dilemma is UNRWA, long accused of bias, mismanagement, and even infiltration by Hamas. So why is Israel effectively feeding its enemies? And how credible are the claims that UNRWA has been compromised by Hamas operatives? To unpack the legal and moral as well as political layers of the story, we are joined by Olga Deutsch, Vice President of NGO Monitor, a Jerusalem-based organization that tracks the transparency, funding, and political influence of international NGOs. She's been one of the leading voices analyzing UNRWA's accountability and the impact of donor-funded aid in conflict zones. Olga, very, very good morning. Thanks for joining us. Let's just start with the basics. When critics say that Israel is being forced to feed its enemies, what does that actually mean in legal and practical terms?
Well, good morning and thank you for having me. And before we jump into the really serious topic, I just want to say for the record, I'll be happy to be your guest next time, only talking about boy and how people don't dance anymore.
Oh, that's funny. And especially because that conversation was even off air while we were waiting to speak to you. Mukundi and I were arguing about whether people dance, and Mukundi's lamenting the fact. And I said, as a Jewish white guys, we're not good at dancing. We can do the weddings, bar mitzvahs, but that's about it.
I think we should definitely dance more.
Absolutely. Oh, wonderful.
But to our much more serious topic, you're really targeting the core of the issue. We have a paradoxical situation where in media, but also in political, in parliaments and political platforms and circles, there is an ongoing attempt to portray the conflict as if there was symmetry, right? As if we were talking about two states, sovereign states, that went into a dispute over, say, territory, and now are being brought to a negotiations table where they're supposed to amicably resolve the remaining issues. Whereas in practice, we have a situation where there's a democratic country that upholds and respects international law, its own law, and its duty to protect and defend its citizens. And on the opposite side, we have a terrorist army. I deliberately do not call them a terrorist organization because I think calling them an organization does not do them justice in terms of how dangerous they have been and will continue to be, which in its creation acts clearly states that it has two main goals, which is the destruction of the state of Israel and Jewish people, and the spread of global jihad. And even after October the 7th, they repeatedly are quoted in the public that by saying that if they are presented an opportunity, they will go and do another October 7th, mm-hmm. right? So they're not even trying to pretend that they don't have genocidal intent. All the while in the international legal system, right? And this morning we particularly want to discuss the ruling or the finding that the International Court of Justice yet again had announced last night, where Israel is accused of intent of genocide, whereas there's Hamas that clearly states intent to annihilate the Jewish people. So on one hand, Israel is supposed to defend itself militarily against the terrorist army. And at the same time, it is being pressured to supply aid, humanitarian aid, to the people of Gaza. Now, there is no dilemma that the humanitarian situation in Gaza is dire. There is no famine and there is no starvation. But yet in every conflict and every conflict-ridden area, and most certainly one that has been undergoing that for over 2 years now, the humanitarian situation is dire. Now, the main structures that have been providing humanitarian aid until October the 7th and even afterwards were the main agencies that were culpable and complicit in allowing Hamas to completely and systematically instrumentalize the aid structures themselves and turn them, if you will, into a weapon of war, which is how we reached the situation that Hamas was able to build tunnels. Yes, it was smuggling things from Egypt, but it was also stealing concrete and other materials that were supplied through humanitarian aid. But it was also using hospitals as military bases. And in each hospital, this is based on original Hamas documents that we at NGO Monitor have in our possessions, and we released in our report in March. Hamas itself says that every hospital had a senior Hamas branch, and everyone in the hospital knew not to come anywhere near that, especially when there is an operation taking place. Moreover, every medical international NGO was appointed a shadow Hamas liaison, as they call it, that was following them around, monitoring and conducting surveillance of their conduct and making sure, according to Hamas documents, that they are not anywhere near places such as Hamas wings in hospitals where they could see things that might compromise Hamas internationally. And there is more and more evidence of this, which all teaches us basically that Hamas is very sophisticated, not only militarily, but also politically. They are savvy. They understand the importance of political warfare. They understand the importance of legitimacy, right? And how they can actually instrumentalize that to further strengthen their both political position, but also legitimacy of their fight in diluting the image that they have as a terror organization.
Right. So, just to interrupt you, so we know that the Red Cross, for example, have been a disaster. They haven't, and it's possible that they are infiltrated. We know UNRWA is. Are they, Doctors Without Borders have certainly Amnesty International. The list just goes on and on and on. I'm wondering, are there any of these NGOs that still have any credibility and independence? And if not, how did we get to the situation where there has been a total infiltration and takeover of almost every humanitarian organization?
Well, that's a big question, but let's try to debunk it in as simple terms as we can. On one hand, inside of Gaza, there was absolutely no way in pre-October 7th reality that any one entity can just play, you know, act independently. Gaza was a police state and continues to be. We see the images that right after the ceasefire, right, agreement, and right after the IDF withdrew from parts of the territories that it was manning, Hamas gets out of tunnels and starts executing any attempt of dissidents, right? And anyone who is not affiliated or supportive of Hamas. This was the reality pre-October 7th as well. It's a police state where everyone's move is very closely watched. So the same was the case with international organizations. Now, in every conflict-ridden area where terror organizations are at play, international organizations and humanitarian aid groups understand that there is a certain level of cooperation with, you know, radical or terror elements in order to even be able to reach targeted population, right? You have to sort of, if they are the only governing entity. And I can understand that argument because this is what we have been hearing from some of them. But what the reality in Gaza was different. You know, we had the reality where they were saying, well, we have no choice other than working in Gaza with Hamas. But then even their headquarters outside of Gaza when Israel would, you know, bomb something in Gaza that, say, was in the proximity of a hospital, they would be the first ones to condemn and accuse Israel of targeting civilian targets, although they knew that actually they themselves and their staff were witnesses of Hamas completely hijacking all these. So I think that it is a combination of the international community and all of us as societies never having demanded, right, checks and balances or integrity from these groups. We do not demand the same moral scruples of the international NGO community that we do from our elected officials or business leaders, right? So we sort of grant them this halo by the mere fact that they themselves define themselves as human rights groups or humanitarian groups. So moving forward, we would need to literally clean that up. And especially in the context of the tens of billions of dollars that will be provided to Gaza in reconstruction aid, right? We need to think in terms of how do we improve vetting and oversight mechanisms? How do we introduce control mechanisms, not only of physical aid and making sure that it is not physically diverted, but also making sure that the parts of that aid don't go to fuel political warfare, both in terms of legitimizing terror groups or appeasing them, as well as delegitimizing Israel in political circles. And at the same time, I do think that there should be some conditions imposed on charities around the world, right? Who gets a charitable status, a tax-deductible status? How do governments control this periodically? I think this entire industry is completely void of transparency and accountability. And as a non-governmental organization myself, I think that that is contrary to what all of us were actually tasked originally to do, which is serve as a complementary moral compass of our respective societies.
So how do you go about fighting this, battling a tsunami? Because that's what this is.
Well, I think that one of the central topics right now, and this is it's a historical opportunity and most critical moment, because right now U.S. and Israel and Arab states, and with some involvement of the broader international community, are sitting down to discuss what does the day after look like in Gaza, right? And they are mainly busying themselves with how does that look administratively, how do they disarm Hamas, and what does the governance look like, and how do they make sure that Hamas is not part of that? And the one thing that we're not hearing is how will the aid be delivered differently? How will it be conditioned to not at the end of the day reaching Hamas or other Palestinian terror groups? What will be the mechanisms that will be able to control that? And at the heart of this is the UN and all its UN agencies, including UNRWA. You opened the item with mentioning UNRWA, right?
Yes.
And they are emblematic of how unable the UN has been historically to actually address any one global crisis around the world. It is a paradoxical situation that governments around the world all designate Hamas, yet the UN doesn't. You know, governments have strategies on combating anti-Semitism, the UN doesn't. The UN hasn't even adopted the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition on anti-Semitism. And we have abundance of evidence that they have completely been complicit, particularly in the Palestinian context, of both allowing terror Palestinian elements to grow and thrive, but also in driving the political anti-Israel discourse. If you have an ICJ ruling that, accuses Israel of apartheid-like policies, right, that says the occupation is illegal, that says that Israel is deliberately starving the Palestinian people, but completely omits to mention, you know, the Palestinian terror and what started this war, then that itself is quite representative of everything that is wrong with the UN. Now, the Trump 20 points plan, actually, one of the points says UN agencies and international NGOs, reintroducing them in Gaza in the context of aid. I think that point deserves much more attention in context of how, which organizations, how do we control them? Who is allowed into Gaza? Who is entrusted in this? If the process of reconstructing Gaza is not intimately coupled with a long-term strategic process of de-radicalization and re-education, so that the Palestinian kids are no longer taught that being a jihad, you know, that being a shaheed and killing a Jew is the highest moral standing, and are instead taught to, you know, like my kids or your kids, you know, they should dance to boy bands at a party.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I think we all will have missed the historical opportunity.
That is an incredibly, incredibly interesting and strong conversation. Olga Deutsch, thank you for that. Vice President of NGO Monitor.